Once knew these two guys. Each, in their own way, had had it all. And blew it. Left with broken brains and battered bravery, having to find parts of themselves they had seen in film and cinema. But who were they anymore? If they were going to do this, it needed to be the most thorough search for identity ever undertaken. Welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast with your hosts, Ben Groves and Rob McFarlane. This episode contains spoilers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show where two best friends with awful mental health analyze the best and worst of cinema as a sort of means of distracting themselves from examining themselves too hard. And it's, you know, it's part movie analysis, part self-analysis, all fun.
But
given that it is a thinly veiled mental health check-in, Ben, how are you and how was this film relevant to your week?
Buddy, I'm a little sad.
Right.
I'm very good. I'm having a great time at the moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, because this is news to me. We've been talking for 20 minutes and then you're just like, I'm very sad. And I'm like, oh, he's at that stage. He's at that stage of suicide where he's at peace.
Yeah. I have my way out. This is my laughing phase.
Yeah.
No, I'm doing very well. I have a Wii console, which I will be picking up shortly. Yes, first time ever owning a Wii. I know, 15 years too late, but also Mario Kart. You know what I mean?
No, Ben. Mario Kart on the Wii is a pile of shit.
Get in the fucking bin. It's mint. It's not as good as N64. I'm not arguing that at all. That's the ultimate one.
It's, if you use the motion control, it's a pile of dog shit. The only reason one needs to own a Nintendo Wii, and it's a good reason, is Wii Sports, which Wii Sports, honestly, I will tuck you in at bowling at Wii Sports.
No, you won't.
Yes, I will, mate. It'll be embarrassing. It'll be embarrassing. You'll sell the Wii.
As soon as I get this Wii, me and you, that's a YouTube extra right there. It's me and you.
You and me having a Wii fight.
Yeah. Just weeing all over each other. This is terrible. But yeah, I'm a little bit sad because this is the end of the Oscar season, man.
Yeah, it's the last one.
It is.
It's the last one. But it's the last one for a reason.
It is.
We figured this one was the one that you had the best shot of enjoying.
Oh, and fucking boy, did I. It was the best pick by a long shot. But yeah, so I'm good, but I'm sad. How are you, buddy?
I'm much the same. I've got a whole block of time off coming up, which is lovely. I get to sit around, be a man of leisure. I guarantee it's going to be about, I'm going to be about 4 hours into it. I'll be like, Ben, is there anything I can do for the podcast, mate?
Yeah, buddy, I'm starting to feel real guilty. Like, what do I do here? You're going to be me in Italy where I'm sitting reading a book, but I've just got the panic sweats of being sort of like, I should be doing everything.
It's literally that. Yeah. I'm going to have completely different colour hair by the time I get back. And you'll just be like, what happened? I'll be like, I got bored.
Now I'm green.
How is this film relevant to my week? Well, as a woman discovering their sexuality, I see a lot in this film movie that's very much about me.
Yeah.
No, not really. Although there are some characters in there that hit a little close to home.
I think this is a very good film for men to watch. It's a very good film for everyone to watch. But I think it's nice. It's nice and refreshing to see how fucking absurd it is. That all these pressures on women are amplified by just dumb shit that dumb people do all the fucking time. And everyone's guilty of it. You know what I mean?
Okay, we've not spoken about this, but I can see we're going to be fighting about this movie.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's going to be fights.
It's going to be good. Fights. It's going to be good, man.
What movie is it for those people who haven't read what
the title
put on the title?
Sure.
Or seen any of the many, like the 15 or 16 social media clips that may have led them here?
Yeah.
What are we covering, just in case?
Today, buddy, we are doing Poor Things.
Yes.
It is Emma Stone, Mark Ruffalo, Willem Dafoe, in a Frankenstein-esque story.
Yep. Been nominated for all the Oscars, and then won very few of them. But it got Best Actress for Emma Stone.
It did. It got best costume.
Got best makeup and hairstyling.
And another one.
Best production design.
Best production design. There it is. It got four Oscars, man. I was fucking gutted. I thought I'd like, I knew it was never going to win more.
Mm-hmm.
But fuck me, could you imagine this winning best picture? I would have lost my shit. I genuinely can't.
It's a very good film, but yeah. I'm going to get into why I don't think it's best picture. I'm going to get into why I'm even surprised it's there.
Really?
I don't think it's a nominee for me.
Mate,
it's
I think
very
this,
good.
This is my pick. Like, if I was to pick out of this.
Yeah.
This is rewatching it as well. I've rewatched it like a couple times in a row yeah, to this. Okay. So like, obviously my Oscar nominations.
I've not watched it as many times as you.
Yeah. So my Oscar picks, I was making predictions, but on my rewatches of this in the run up to this episode, it was on Sunday, ironically, when the Oscars were happening. I was like, fuck, I should have just changed all my answers to this because it's just fucking wicked. Every time you watch it, there's something new that's going on, man.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Things cost $35 million to make.
Okay, that's a lot cheaper than I expected, to be honest, given the cast and given the way it looks. I've gone for sort of 60, 70.
Same. It's made $108 million at the box office.
So far.
It was nominated for Best Picture. Emma Stone won the Oscar for Best Actress.
It's contentious, but yeah.
Oh, nah, mate. It's fucking banging. She lost herself in this role. Fair fucking play to her, buddy.
To be fair, she did.
Yeah. So we're going to be covering Poor Things, the super fun, hard-hitting, dark comedy that challenges the norm of what cinema-goers expect from a modern, quirky reimagining of Frankenstein. And fuck me, buddy. I'm glad it's here.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, me too. Before anyone gets the wrong idea, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this film. Good. I think it's an incredibly fun, imaginative, it's like Terry Gilliam fucked Tim Burton and they had a Monty Python baby. It's like a nice thing and I'm glad it exists. And I will rewatch it for fun, pleasure and
please do.
But my issues with it are if it's an Oscars movie or whether it does what I want the Oscars movies to do.
And
I think I might have gone in with expectations that were given to me by the media around it that were all completely wrong.
I hyped this film up to you a lot as well. I kind of regret doing that because I feel like I've raised your expectations.
Yeah, I'm really allergic to raised expectations. If someone goes, you're like this, I'll go, fucking watch me not right now.
Everyone has that little voice in the back of their head that like...
I'm an individual.
Yeah, if I'm about to make a bowl of cereal and someone goes, why don't you make a bowl of cereal? I'm like, fuck you, I don't want one. I want one. I was about to do one, but because you've asked me to, now I won't.
100% that.
That little voice in everyone's head is 45% of the volume in your head. It drowns out most of the stuff in your head.
Yes,
oh, Rob, 100%. I think you'd enjoy this. Fuck you, will I?
Yeah, yeah. Watch me not now.
Yeah.
You've ruined it. Well done.
Out of spite, I'm going to fucking hate it. It could be the best. Rob, I found this new band that you're really going to enjoy. Who is it? Tool. Fuck them. Hate them.
Yeah.
Wank.
Yeah.
Absolute shit.
Exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the benefit of the few people that may not have seen this, it's relatively new out. We are about to spoil it because we're going to break down what happens in the movie so that those of you that have seen it, maybe at the cinema, can be reminded and know what the fuck we're talking about later in the show. But if you are planning to watch this film, now's a great time to pause it and come back once you've seen the movie. You'll enjoy the show a lot more. You'll enjoy the movie a lot more. There are no losers except the two blokes you're listening to. So,
yeah, I was going to say, man, we're the ones that are doing this. You know what I mean? You can say that as much as you want, but who's that really for, them or us? You know what I mean?
I'm a winner.
I've written this week's breakdown.
Ooh.
I took a stab at it. I kept it very close to the bone because this film is very near and dear to my heart. I think this is probably top 10 films in the last few months.
Okay. Shall I kick us off?
I think you should because there is a fucking mammoth paragraph.
Yeah, I just saw it and I was like, let's save us 20 minutes. Hey?
Yeah. I wrote it and I'm still going to struggle with it, I promise you.
You've been great. You always undersell your breakdown reading ability and then you smash it. So I'm going to start.
I like the pat on the back. You know what I mean? I need that done at the end of
it. That's what it is. Oh, my brain went somewhere. We're not. Anyway.
Yep. I heard it.
In Victorian London, medical student Max McCandles becomes an assistant to the eccentric surgeon Godwin Baxter. He falls in love with Godwin's human experiment, Bella, a childlike young woman. Godwin reveals that Bella is actually a woman called Victoria who killed herself whilst pregnant by leaping off a bridge. He replaced Victoria's brain with her unborn fetus's brain, resulting in Bella literally having an infant's mind.
We did do a spoiler warning before this, right? Because I feel like I've just unraveled the first two acts of the film in one sentence.
Yeah, you've basically given the act two twist in line one.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, spoilers. With Godwin's encouragement, Max asks for Bella's hand in marriage. Bella accepts. But as her intelligence rapidly develops, she becomes curious about the outside world and herself.
Mm-hmm.
By exploring her own body, she discovers masturbation and how to work herself.
Mm-hmm.
She runs off with Duncan Wedderburn.
Legend.
Fuck off. A dickhole lawyer whom Godwin hired to overhaul a nuptial contract for Max and Bella.
I disagree with that, but fine. Bella and Duncan embark on a grand journey, starting in Lisbon, where Bella's sexual awakening takes form. When Bella becomes too difficult to be controlled, Duncan smuggles her onto a cruise ship, hoping to steal her away from the sexual adventures outside of their relationship that Bella has been experimenting with. Bella befriends passengers Martha and Harry, who open her mind to philosophy. Duncan attempts to stunt Bella's growth by depriving her of books and human contact, but to no avail. He becomes exasperated, gets fucked up, gambles to escape his situation, and fucking wins big.
Yes, buddy.
But during a stop at Alexandria, Bella witnesses the suffering of the poor and becomes distraught. She steals Duncan's winnings to give it to the needy, wrongly entrusting it to two shady crewmen of the cruise ship to pass the money on. Unable to afford the rest of the trip, Bella and Duncan are kicked off the ship in Marseille and make their way to Paris. Seeking money and accommodation, Bella finds a most enjoyable line of work at a brothel. Duncan, enraged by this, has a breakdown, legend, and Bella abandons him. At the brothel, she comes under the tutelage of Madame Swinney, and begins a relationship with another prostitute, Toinette, who introduces her to socialism.
Her father, Godwin, now terminally ill, asks Max to bring Bella home to him. Max locates her after tracking down Duncan, who has been institutionalized.
Legend.
Back in London, Bella reconciles with Godwin and renews her plans to marry Max, but the wedding is interrupted by Duncan and General Alfie Blessington.
It does sound like a Cockney euphemism for like weed, doesn't it?
All right, mate, you got an eight for that Alfie. Eh? You got that
Alfie Blessington, mate.
Alfie Blessington, mate. You got a cue with the Alfie Blessington. Yeah, go on then, lad. cheeky, sticky. I don't know what Cockney said.
You really ran with that. It was a very small aside.
Yeah, and
you
I know. Just spent, I'm sorry, man.
You fell into your James McAvoy split persona.
Honestly,
there.
I blacked out for a second there, mate. I don't really know what happened. Alfie, addressing Bella as Victoria, declares that they were married before her disappearance and that he has come to reclaim her. Insane.
Mm.
She abandons Max to learn of her and her mother's past life, but discovers Alf. She abandons Max to learn of her and her mother's past life, but discovers Alfie's violent and sadistic nature, realizes that Victoria killed herself to escape Alfie's grasp.
Alfie Blessington confines Bella to his mansion. He threatens her at gunpoint to submit to genital mutilation, demanding she drink a chloroform cocktail. She tosses the spiked martini in his stupid face.
Go, Bella.
After a struggle, Alfie accidentally shoots himself in the foot before passing out. Her father Godwin dies peacefully with Bella and Max at his side. Bella decides to follow Godwin's footsteps by becoming a surgeon with the help of Max and Toinette, while Alfie, who now has a goat brain in his head, lives the rest of his days as a sort of fucked up family pet at Bella's inherited estate.
Yes, buddy.
So to recap, Bride of Frankenstein, child monster, goes out into the world, discovers her body, has a whole bunch of sexual adventures,
yep.
Decides once she's done with those sexual adventures to come back, marry the guy that she met at the beginning. She was always intending to marry him. She just wanted to go out and learn some stuff of the world.
Yeah.
And is cock-blocked at the altar by the husband of her body, not her brain, who is a prick. So she turns him into a goat. It's a tale as old as time.
If you haven't heard this tale before, are you living under a rock? What's going on? I mean,
cliche after cliche.
I know. It's so popular. There is a SpongeBob episode which essentially tells the same story.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I know. I've got no clue, man. So straight off the bat, this film is A...
not about vampires, Ben. It's about Frankenstein, so bats don't come into it. Dickhead.
Fuck off. So straight off the monster, this is a fucking hilarious film.
Yes, it is.
Yorgos Lanthimos is insanely talented when it comes...
Is it Yorgos or Yorgos? Because Yorgos sounds like a sort of Hot Topic discount store.
If I'm saying Yorgos, it's because I'm struggling. It's not on purpose.
Oh, okay. I don't... I'm
it's Yorgos. Okay. I'm just... Right. I don't know, fat-tongued, I guess. I don't know what else could cause it.
Doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Dyslexia, maybe? I don't know. Yep.
No, I'm just checking.
So Yorgos Lanthimos is fucking hilarious in his films. Has been, always will be. My favorite thing about this director, by a long shot, is that he never guides the conversation of his films. He never spoon-feeds his audience. He has such a trust in his audience to make their own minds up about what's happening and what the message is, that he just goes, here is the weirdest fucking situation you've ever seen in your entire life, with a handful of messages sort of like peppered throughout that are all relevant to the human experience. Have fun with it, enjoy it, and if you don't, that's completely fine.
Totally, but you love films like that, and I've always said, if for me it feels like somebody offering to send you nudes and then like... 3 days later, you get an envelope with just jigsaw pieces in it. It's like, just make your own. But because it's Yorgos Lanthimos, some of them are just other, some of them are a jellyfish. And he's like, oh, I thought you also might like want that jellyfish.
That's fucking incredible. That's a merch idea right there. That is me. That's a fucking merch idea. I'm just going to get a t-shirt printed up that says Yorgos, and then it's just a bunch of jigsaw pieces of his face.
No. Sell the t-shirt and then just mail them some fucking cloth and a rubber stamp.
And like a needle and some stitch and stuff. Yeah. No, that's cool. That's cool. But I love that though, man. I love that.
You do. And it's you've always loved it. You loved it with Blomkamp. And I think this film... It does do that. And I think that will always forever annoy me because I'm always like, just fucking commit. Do you know what I mean? Say something. Just say a thing. What this film does do, however, is when I say it doesn't tell a story, it just, you know, it just gives you jigsaw pieces. Mm-hmm. It does tell a story. The subtext is what's all jigsawed. The subtext is what's kind of salad-y.
Okay.
The actual narrative itself is very fairy tale, very children's story. And watching it, for me, it was reminiscent of reading a sort of fantasy children's book, but for grown-ups. It's like the language and the structure and the visuals are all the sort of same that you would get in a bedtime story. It's just that this is a bedtime story for grown-ups. So it's got lots of vaginas and willies in it.
And a super freaky crab man.
Yes.
Who is like scuttering around bare ass naked, kind of.
And eats hair.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That shit haunts my dreams.
But the actual narrative of the story is very clear.
Okay.
Very satisfying and very funny.
I'm going to...
The scattershot approach was for me in the subtext. And that's the thing you've always loved.
I do love that. And the only reason... I'm going to agree with you wholeheartedly. The surface story is quite straightforward, but it's very fun and very interesting on its own.
Brilliant.
Without a subtext.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's so outlandish and wild.
Exactly.
And like you've said, fairy tale-esque.
Mm-hmm.
On my first watch, I watched this in the cinema for the first time, right? And I walked out of it and I was like, that was super fun, super fucked up. It's quite messy. There's a lot of stuff where I'm like, eh? And I loved it because I was like, that was just, it was a great fucking time.
Yeah.
My second watch through, however, because I knew what to expect and I knew at a surface level, I knew what was coming, right? The big fucking like over the top set designs, the costume designs, everything about it is very big, very loud, very colorful. The cinematography kind of throws you for six sometimes when it switches from like super wide lens to fisheye.
Yeah.
And it sort of snaps back and forth like this. It catches you off guard every now and then. My second watch through, I was expecting all of this. So the subtext really started to play with my mind, and it started to interlink with the surface story.
Yeah, yeah.
And by my third watch through, mate, I was like, I was in a rabbit hole and I couldn't get out. Like, I got out of the rabbit hole about 3 hours ago, and literally, it's the most fun I've had researching a film in, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months.
No.
Serious. Really? It's been ridiculous, man. It's been ridiculous. So
why? Like, tell me some of why. Because from where I'm sitting, it's a fun film. It's a great film.
Okay.
And I think a lot of the, not research, but a lot of what I'd seen about it online made the film worse for me, not better. So tell me the stuff that makes it better.
Come and join me on a journey. Hey,
ooh,
Papa Squat. Goodness. Jump on Papa Ben's knee. All right.
I'd rather not with this film, but okay.
All right. It's probably for the best. Here's a thought, right? When I was watching this in the cinema, in a room full of strangers.
Yes.
It was quite a packed screening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how many people were aware of how much sex was in this film, but I was sat in a silent room full of strangers watching Emma Stone get plowed for
That's
2 hours.
That's probably the largest number of erect penises you've been in a 10-meter radius of.
This was in no way sexy to me in the slightest.
It's not a sexy film. The sex scenes aren't. No, I've got a whole point about the sex isn't sexy in this
We're
film.
We're going to come back to that, but it was just it was a very strange experience to watch to watch that much sex in a room full of strangers and everyone's just completely silent.
I went to go see Park Chan-wook's The Handmaiden at the cinema.
Ooh, fucking hell. Yeah, all right. That's a bit much. Yeah. All right. So we're going to go on a little journey. I'm going to take you on. I'm going to take you on my journey down this rabbit hole. You ready?
Yeah. By all means.
So Poor Things is based on a novel called Poor Things by Alistair Gray.
Funny that.
So the story is a little bit different, though.
Yes, it is. It is.
So
that
in,
I know.
In the book, it's the life of Bella Baxter.
Mm-hmm.
Her early life is drowned in ambiguity and is then complicated when her husband Archibald McCandle's autobiography. That claims she was a corpse that was resurrected by McCandle's colleague, Dr. Godwin Baxter, who swapped her brain with an unborn fetus's, resulting in an infant mind, comes out.
Yep.
So, Bella's designed as Archibald's companion, but her sexual appetite leads her to pursue other men, eventually eloping and traveling Europe, Northern Africa, Central Asia, with a lawyer called Duncan Wedderburn. But the book is told from the perspective of all the other characters about Bella.
Oh, okay.
So it's from the outside looking in, whereas the movie is Bella's point of view, and we get to see how everyone's actions and opinions and thought processes
change her,
which I thought was a very fucking interesting dynamic to take.
Yes.
Like the film, the book is insanely dark, very quirky, and a satirical take on the classic Frankenstein story, which we can expect from it.
Yeah.
And with that, I got into a little bit. I've ordered a copy of the book that'll be arriving soon. I cannot wait to read that.
I didn't see as much you mentioned there with the book being much more about how people sort of view Bella, and this being much more about Bella and her internal stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't see as much of that. I think one of my main criticisms of not Emma Stone's performance but the film is that it's quite an external view of Bella. You never really know what she's thinking. Now, I understand there's that bit where she quotes Diogenes, Duncan Wedderburn comes up and she's like, you're standing in my sun, which is what the philosopher Diogenes said to Alexander the Great, right?
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, that's clever. That's a nice literary reference.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of why, like, if she hadn't said that, I wouldn't have known that it was philosophy at all. She's just reading a book.
They're talking about philosophy as she's reading that book.
Yeah. But I don't know. I get what you're saying. Relate to her because there wasn't an awful lot to relate to in terms of open emoting.
Did you find her emoting a little bit more as the film went on? Did you find Bella's ability to emote
as she becomes more eloquent and she becomes more adult?
So,
of course,
how many children do you know that can eloquently communicate their complex feelings and thoughts and desires and confusions?
I don't know, mate. You have your moments.
I do. But they're fucking few and far between, man. They are few and far between. You know what I mean?
Understand, of course. But what I'm saying is,
yeah,
that's her character, and I understand that. But what it means, what it leaves you with, is a character for the first half of the movie. You're like, I don't really know what's going on with her.
Yes. Until you rewatch, and you do know what's going on with her, then you start to see her actions and her choices, and the influences outside of her choices, and you go, oh, that's kind of fucked up. That's kind of fucked up.
Okay.
The cinematography is a big clue in this one as well.
Okay, how so?
So the cinematography is fucking huge in this film. It's absolutely gorgeous, right?
It's one of the most beautiful films I've seen all year.
Yes, without a doubt. Everything is grand. Everything is out of proportion. Everything is large and wondrous. Yeah. It's as a child would see the world for the first time seeing the world. You know what I mean? The first time totally. Entering like a bustling city with trams overhead and huge skyscrapers everywhere and balconies overlooking like beautiful ocean views.
Yeah.
It's how a child would see it. But every shot...
it's got that sense of scale and that sense of wonder and that sense of, I don't know what that is over there.
Yes. You know, when you're ill, like when you're getting ill and your dreams sort of end up out of proportion where everything seems slightly larger than it should be. That's how I know I'm getting ill, because I'll have a dream and I'll wake up and I'm like, oh my God, everything's normal size. Oh, fuck, I've got the flu. You know what I mean?
I've never had that.
Oh, okay. Well, just me then. Let us know in the comments. Drop us a message on Discord if that shit's happened to you, because you're like the fifth person that I've mentioned this to recently and everyone's like, I don't know what you're saying to me.
Or email us at everymovieeveruk@gmail.com if you've not got Discord. You know, you're good.
Please do. Let me know if you have out of proportion dreams when you are getting ill. But back to the cinematography, right?
Right.
Every shot in this gorgeous film is full of vibrant color and warped perspectives, right? So you've got like the few shots that are kind of like fisheye lens, or they're so wide that they distort on the edges. It's
gorgeous. Fucking
beautiful. But it also distorts the context of the situations that Bella is in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if the situations that she's in are played straight in a normal set, in a normal circumstance, like A to B, serious acting, let's go, right? That is harrowing as fuck, right? Just think about the boat.
A fair bit.
Mate, think about the boat scene. The one that you just quoted, right? You're in my son. Think about that scene, realistically. Bella has made two friends on the boat.
Yes.
She's discovered philosophy and she's reading a book and she's challenging herself intellectually. She's found people that are stimulating her mind. She's growing as a person. She's learning. That should be exciting if you genuinely care about a person. Rob, if you get excited about something and you're learning something new, I fucking adore that, because you don't shut 100%. The fuck up about it. You'll text me at 3 a.m. with Reddit threads going, hey man, check this out about a MOOC that I just fucking discovered. And I'm like, hey man, that's great. It's 3 a.m. And you're like, yeah, I know. Isn't this great? And I'm like, yeah, fuck it. All right, I'm in it. Let's read this thread.
Like when I found out there was Rule 34 of Ants and I kept sending you Ants.
Yes.
And Bugs Life.
Yes, continuously. Just fucking all the fucking time, mate. I would wake up to thread. You would having full-blown conversations with yourself. I loved every second of it.
It's brilliant.
So Bella's doing this. She's growing as a person. She's learning like an absolute boss. She's reading books like no man's business. Duncan comes over and is like, you're becoming a bit too intellectual. You're reading a lot more now and I don't appreciate that.
Yeah.
And throws her books overboard in front of her new friends. And it's just sort of like, if you it's play savage, that straight, that is fucking awful. That is genuinely like, just, I can't imagine being Martha in that situation and watching that happen.
But you're right. It's not even in the cinematography. It's in the dialogue.
Yeah.
The way everyone's dialogue is that of a children's book.
Yes.
It's this kind of allegorical, metaphorical. I always make the point where I'm like, I need people to be believable characters. I need to see somebody on screen and go, that's how humans behave.
Yes.
Unless you were dealing with a clearly metaphorical or a figurative situation. I don't watch Wes Anderson films and go, that's not how people talk, because I get that the style is like I'm being told a story.
Right.
So the dialogue becomes story-like.
Right, okay.
And with the dialogue of this film and the cinematography of this film, it adds to the fact that it's trying to sort of heavily indicate this is not a literal film.
Yes.
As in, like, it's obviously a film,
yes,
but we are not meaning you to take all of this literally.
Yeah, yeah, okay? Exactly.
You're supposed to engage your brain and go, what does this represent? It's representational.
Exactly.
It's symbolic. It's all this sort of stuff.
Okay.
In the same way that a Wes Anderson film You're being told a story and it's symbolic of something.
Yeah.
The same is true here.
Okay, so take the scene that I've just said on the boat with Duncan Wedderburn coming up and throwing books overboard because he doesn't like that.
Yes,
Bella
has an interest that he can't relate to.
Yeah, because she's slipping through his grasp. He no longer has full control over her. She's becoming independent and thinking for herself. Yes. So he throws the books overboard in front of her new friends. In the middle of that scene, it snaps to a fisheye lens, which distorts the whole thing. The whole image of what's happened is completely distorted. And it's, do you have memories from early childhood that seem distant?
Yeah.
When you're thinking about them, they're not in the forefront of your mind. They seem like almost warped perspective. It was, when I saw this in the cinema for the first time, I was like, holy shit, that's like my childhood. In places, some of my childhood feels like it's been distorted to a point where it's through a fisheye lens and I'm like, oh my God, we're watching a core memory unfold in this child brain in an adult woman's body through a wildly abusive situation, and I don't know how to handle myself right now.
It's a good point you make, and I think it's an important one because there's a couple of criticisms that have been made of this movie.
Okay.
But I think some I agree with and others I don't.
Yeah.
The one I definitely don't agree with is that the conceit of this movie is that it is a child's brain that's been put into an adult woman's body.
Okay.
Now, if you watch the film literally and go, that's a child, and she then goes on to have her sexual awakening and be taken around the world by Duncan Wedderburn and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Then yes, it's a horrific, abusive, disgusting film, right?
Yeah.
But it's so clearly metaphorical for this is a fully grown woman's body and her brain is as new.
Yes.
We are talking about a figurative woman through the stages of her development.
Yeah, it's the same
as metaphor, it's a fairy tale. And it's a little bit like going, oh, okay, what's wrong with your car? Well, it's a little bit like it's not getting the food it needs, you know, because there's a break in the fuel line. So it's a little bit like if you were eating and you know, you had a hole in your stomach and it kept falling out. And then someone went, I've not got a hole in my stomach. You're a shit mechanic.
Yeah.
It's like,
I mean,
it's a metaphor, dickhead.
But if a mechanic turned around and went, you have a hole in your stomach, I wouldn't know whether to trust him or not. Because I was like, this man knows the insides of cars. I don't.
Yeah.
This person knows the insides of cars. I don't.
So you defer to authority.
Yeah.
Much like Bella does.
Yes.
Yeah. But in a situation in which you're unfamiliar, you go around and get some more information.
Yeah.
And then you apply it poorly because you have a naive understanding of it.
The
like
whole
Bella.
Fucking, yeah, the whole film is it highlights the absurdities of these like boundaries and expectations put on women. And it's told through the perspective of a woman who was not raised in that world and taught that this is how it is. It's someone completely new to the situation, and it highlights how fucking absurd it is in the most colourful, playful, bouncy way possible. Super fucking fun way. Yeah. Speaking of fun and bouncy.
Right.
Sound effects and score of Poor Things is fucking insane. I've never been so all my days.
I'm keeping that.
I think I might have just had a stroke.
No, Ben, I'm keeping that. It's important.
I've never felt more conflicted in my entire life.
Yeah.
Watching some of the most horrific shit I've ever seen in cinema, like genuinely trying to put myself in a situation that Bella is in and just enjoying life and loving it with the happiest, bounciest, funnest, fucking like goofiest soundtrack going on ever. It is masterfully done, man. Masterfully
done. It is really good. It's a fantastic, fantastic score. I think it's responsible for so much of how this film feels.
Yes.
You could so easily change the entire meaning and tone of this film by changing a couple of notes in this soundtrack.
It could be the most sinister film in existence with a different soundtrack.
Yeah, totally.
It's insane. There's one scene very early on where Bella's still like infant brain and she's sitting down to eat dinner with Godwin, her father Godwin, for the first time. And he is like, his face is all carved up. His thumbs are enormous. He's like, obviously a victim of some sort of abuse that hasn't come to life yet, but he's fine with it. But because he's eating, and you can see that he's sort of been abused, he has to plug in like a fucking mechanical liver. there's weird fluids going on, and all of this shit has to happen just for him to process food.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are both happy as anything.
100%.
Right up until the 100%. Point when Godwin leans back and does this unholy, and just lets this bubble, this weird fucking like disgusting bile bubble out of his mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bella's so excited. She's clapping. She's like, yay. And when it pops, there's this really nice sort of like bouncy strings slap. Playing. Yeah. Oh my God, dude. I was watching it. I was like, that is fucking disgusting.
I thought the way they dealt with Godwin was really good because there was a kind of whole cycle of abuse thing there where he was willing to do the things that he was doing, putting infant brains in adult women's bodies and some really, you know, kind of quite emotionless and, as they keep saying, empirical data-based stuff. I'm going to do this horrific thing and just see what happens because I want to learn about the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was able to justify that by it all being a fraction of what his father did to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't possibly be wrong what he's doing, because if what Godwin is doing is wrong, then he has to think back on all the things that were done to him as a kid and go, well, that was wrong too. That kind of cycle of abuse stuff, fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, wonderful film for using that sort of childish allegory to reflect stuff on our real world. I think the issue I had, with the film is that it was sold to me through all the media I read beforehand as a fantastic feminist film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my argument is that it's a film about a woman.
It is.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
It's a film about a woman being smart, funny, capable, brilliant.
Yeah.
It's a film about a woman enjoying sex. Even better, right? But I think it's not saying anything that should be new to anyone. And trying to get all of the disparate, we just talked about Godwin and that cycle of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Every sort of scene has a weird little bit of subtext. They all point in different directions. And it comes across as this kind of frayed mess of stuff.
Okay.
But I'm sure I could probably rewatch and stitch together like a sort of Frankenstein monster.
Like a Frankenstein monster, yeah.
Into something that I wanted to.
Yeah.
But what it would never be, there would be no message of female empowerment in there unless this film was written in the 1920s. And it's just like, oh, what? Women like sex? Oh, what? Women like learning?
Oh. Do you know what's really interesting
women
about this one?
Their own people. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, I'll agree. And I'll agree with your first statement that this is full of stuff that everyone should know. But unfortunately, it's not the world we live in, is it?
I know. But
it's not the world we live in.
I don't put films on for... I don't go, oh, do you know what? I think this is an important film for Steve down the road to see.
Yeah, of course not. It's a fun exploration of going, hey, so this is set in Victorian England. Doesn't this seem fucking ridiculous? Also,
yes,
the set designs and the costumes and everything else makes it feel very futuristic. So it spans
everything
an
about
age.
This film is wonderful. But when you're coming into it with writers going, oh, it's a powerfully clever feminist statement, and then you watch it, and
it can be.
Fuck it, is it?
It can be.
Yeah, it can't be.
Of course, it can.
Okay, name one thing. Name one thing this film taught you about women. You didn't
okay.
Know
this film taught me that women have far more expectations on them from far more sources than I truly realized on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis. Like I understand. I'm going to hold my hands up. I was quite naive in the whole sort of. I understand the certain struggles that are very sort of like poignant and highlighted and spoken about a lot. But there's so many tiny fucking nuanced things that are just precious from nowhere for no fucking reason. And you've got to deal with that shit on a day-to-day basis. And then you've got these fucking caricature men of different pressures. I mean, obviously everything's overplayed and played up to big to sort of illustrate.
Caricature
like,
was the right word. And I think that was the issue I had, is that the caricatures were so funny and so vivid and so wild that it's that they were all hammers. And I think I was expecting a point made with tweezers, and it wasn't. It was made with hammers.
What about if you're in the driving seat and you're the one that's having hammers thrown at you on a moment-to-moment basis?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Like, for me, that's what it kind of was. It was literally pointing out, going, you see how fucking stupid this looks? This is a real thing. You see how it's set in the 1920s, and you're thinking, that would never happen in these days. Boom! Spans decades, mate. Still going on. Still happening. It's fucking insane, isn't it? And you're like, oh yeah, this is insane. And then the film gets more insane. You're like, oh my God. Like, this is fucking mental. Like, I'm going to hold my hands up, right? I'm going to hold my hands up, and I'm going to say the male characters in this film, every man alive can relate to every male character in this film.
Oh, God,
to an extent. And I'm praying. I know that all, like, the sort of the male friends that I have, all of us will stand around and go, yeah, we've all been a Duncan Wedderburn at some point. We've all been fucking infatuated and fucked up and weirdly like, mine. Please be mine. I love you. Ah, Bella, you cunt. Yes. You know what I mean? Kind of stuff. And it's cringy.
It's so good.
Oh, mate.
Mark Ruffalo is so good in this film.
Fucking amazing. I never thought that Mark Ruffalo would say the word cunt in such a beautiful
three times,
way.
So wonderfully.
Yeah, it's the three best single times I've ever heard the word cunt. It's incredible. In Paris, when he just stood there going, cunt! But yeah, I think everyone holds their hands up, but they learn from their mistakes and they don't end up institutionalized. But sometimes people do, and some people don't learn from their mistakes, and those cycles don't break. Yes. And it's just, this film just shines a light on it in such a magnificently stupid way.
I don't disagree
way.
With you. I don't disagree with you at all. We've nailed it down. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderfully human film about the value in learning and trying new things and going out of your comfort zone and listening to people. Mm-hmm. All of which are very important things for everyone. And I felt a little disappointed that the takeaway from, admittedly, the first watch was, isn't it wonderful that women can do these things? I'm like,
I know what you're saying.
But it's still a wonderful thing. I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, I hate the fact that it pointed it out. No, of course, it's a wonderful thing to point out. It's just, I think it was a failure of expectation going in.
But to a librarian that has read three books a week for the last 20 years, will be able to sit there and tell you, well, this is what you should know about literacy. You know what I mean? This is what you should know about authors. These are the basic, this is like entry level shit. Uh-huh.
Totally.
And then for someone that's read one book in the last decade, they're going to go, fucking what? Fucking whom?
Yeah, totally. And that's why I think it's a great film. But is it an Oscars film? Because for me, the Oscars is when all the librarians get together and go, what's the best film you've read this week?
1,000%. 1,000%. I'll agree with you. I will agree with you. But what makes this film so much better is that when all of those librarians got together, they were like, what's this film about to you? And every single one of them had something different to say. And okay, that's what tickles my tits, man. That's what gets me going. You know what I mean?
Fair, talking
about the whole feminism side of stuff, I like that it highlighted how fucking ridiculous a lot of the male characters were. I like that it had, for me, it had like two very clear cut sides. It had Max, who was a very flawed human, you know, very prone to jealousy, man of science, head over heart, type believing, right? And sort of supported Bella in whatever she chose to do, not necessarily happy about it. Wasn't in any way, shape, or form using Bella for his benefit.
No.
Well, I mean, a bit at the beginning when he was, you know, the whole experiment stuff. But once he caught feelings and understood that she was her own person, which was a kind of...
Yeah, again, this is a very figurative take.
Yes.
Because this is a very figurative film. So don't take what I'm about to say literally, because it would be incest. But I saw the three main figures in this movie being the three main sorts of relationships that men tend to offer, which is a fatherly, a brotherly, or a sexual.
So
you have Godwin being, I'm your dad and I'm going to look after you and I know what's best for you.
Sure.
You have
I'll agree
Max,
with that
who's
one.
The whole like, I'm your mate and I'm not here to limit you and I just want to see you do the best in the world because you're brilliant.
Is that what you're saying is brotherly?
Vaguely, yeah.
Sure.
And then you've got absolute legend that is Duncan just being like, Ha, I'm the best lover in the world.
Right.
I've had over 100 women and I'm like, clap, 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 clap. What a treasure.
I honestly.
And then he ruins it in the end.
Duncan makes me fucking cringe so hard. It makes me feel like my stomach is being wrung out like an old dishcloth, man.
I love him. I love him so much.
He is pure heart over head. He's nothing but emotion, impulse. I want this now. Let's do this now. Yeah. Let's eat an egg tart and fuck 4 times in Lisbon. Like, fuck your marriage. Fuck that I'm supposed to be drawing up a contract. Fuck all this. My impulses and what I want is more important than you and the rest of your fucking life. That's insane to me.
I was on his side when it was our impulses. I lost all sympathy for Duncan when it became his impulses.
Mm.
When he was like, live your life, experience the world. I was like, fuck yes, Duncan.
Sure.
When it became, oh no, it's about me. I'm like, ah, oh, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah. But what I was thinking, so for this episode, if you're up for editing in like a little skit, we could do like, you know, the monster truck thing of like, Sunday, 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 head versus heart, emotion versus science, cunt versus not so cunty average man.
Well, no, because I think Max is cunty in his own way, because he does keep Bella in the dark because he's in awe of Bella's father, and he's not a bad man, but he's arguably a very weak man. Like some guy turns up at his wedding and he's like, oh yeah, okay, see ya. He's not like, oh no, cool, this is fighting then. He's like, oh yeah, just walk into my wedding and take my wife. Do you know what I mean? So Max isn't great. And Duncan's got, you know, I don't think it's a...
I feel like you're cheerleading for Duncan too much for this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday skit. This is too much.
Try again.
So the skit that we're going to do is Sunday, 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 head versus heart, weak, flaccid man who will let you steal his wife at his wedding versus legend Duncan, wild abuser, insane person. It's a shit skit now, Rob. I feel like we've just sold it up the fucking river. I tell you what, we'll skip the skit. Skip the skit.
Sack it off completely.
Yeah. Sack it off completely.
Okay.
Bella, second chance at life for Victoria. Victoria got to a place where she was so fucking unhappy, felt trapped. Only way out was to kill herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bella's brain being implanted into Victoria's body. She has a complete clean slate, and each character introduces her into like an element of society, like past and present, right?
Yeah.
That she's learning from. She's taking from innocent and childlike to an experienced, well-rounded adult who understands her surroundings and herself.
Yeah, totally.
I've broken down each character and what I think they mean to Bella's journey. This is just a personal thing, but I had a lot of fun doing this week. Buddy, this is a fifth of what I've done. Like, if we're going to do all of it, it's a 6-hour episode. I've got 3 documents open in front of me right now. I've got my show notes. I've got my fucking nerdy notes. And then I've got my Charlie Day scribblings with fucking red twine and shit all over my wall. Do you know what I mean? Right. So you've got a father, Godwin, who is very, he's unemotional. His logic, scientific mind that he believes that... you've got a father, Godwin, who is unemotional, logical, and his scientific mind believes that the ends always justify the means. He's fine with the abuse that happened to him because of the discoveries his father made off the back of them, which pushed his career forward. And now he's able to teach this weird and wonderful sadistic science as fact because he has the evidence to back it up.
Yeah.
Max is a good representation of a flawed man doing his best to traverse the line between science and emotion. He's trying to find a balance between scientific understanding and emotional intelligence, which I mean, we can all relate to how difficult it is to traverse a line like that, right?
God, yeah, yeah.
He's very
totally.
Thoughtful. He's very supportive.
She learns kind of empathy from Max.
You know,
she doesn't get that from Godwin.
It's empathy, trust, and sort of a supportive nature that she doesn't really get from anyone else for a while. So he is thoughtful, he's supportive, he's jealous, but he's honest. You've got Duncan, who is toxic as fuck, is exploitative, he's controlling, he's childish and manipulative, he is very fun.
Lets her do what she wants.
He has no moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
It's himself.
Shows her a world of possibility.
No, he doesn't.
Takes around the world.
And then immediately snatches it back when he's like, no, don't go do that without me,
because you're mine. Yeah, fine.
It's his self-gain over everything.
Yeah, Duncan, we're not going to agree on Duncan.
He is Bella's sexual awakening, right?
Legend.
Then you have Prim, who's the she's like the housekeeper or the maid at Godwin's residence and Bella's first home. She represents the order. You know, she's very modest. Yes. She's a quaint representation of the serving class.
Yep.
Because Bella doesn't really see her as a serving class. She sees her as more of like
a person.
Like a person or like a part of the furniture that's just in the house. This is what this is what Prim does. She loves it. Martha is a source of knowledge and books. She introduces her to feminism, independence, and is the source of her intellectual awakening.
Very true.
You've got Harry, who is the loss of Bella's innocence.
Yeah.
He's the cynical realist. I related to this guy far too much, man. Everything that came out of his mouth, I was Harry. Like, fucking, yeah, I agree with this. And then it got to
a virus.
Oh, it got to the Harry. End of his scene, and I was like, oh no, that's me. I need to change. He's the cynical realist who shatters the illusions of everyone's having a lovely time, and he does it from an ivory tower while showing her literal hundreds of dead babies and going, this is the poor class that you will never fucking be a part of because they're funding your lifestyle.
Zone of interest on.
He literally fucking, it's like a live action role play. Yeah. And he was like, there you go. From our ivory tower, have a look at that. Isn't that a lovely one? You've got Toinette, who is the same sex awakening. It's a lesbian experience, you know what I mean? She's unwavering.
She's like a proper mate. She's like a proper mate, Toinette.
Don't say this because we're proper mates and it's not that.
Oh, God, no.
You know what I mean?
No. Yeah.
But she's a very sincere female support. She's got admiration, genuine admiration for Bella.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real true friendship. Swiney is exploitative, business-driven, Swiney, the brothel madam, she is exploitative, she is business driven, she is a manipulative capitalist, but also kind of wise in a like a motherly way to an extent.
I kind of saw her as just the survivor.
Yeah.
She's like, look, this is how you survive.
Yes. Right? She's
you've
very
gotta do what you gotta do.
Yes.
You're not gonna enjoy everything you need to do.
Yes.
It's gotta get done.
Exactly.
Now, fucking go out there and have sex with some uggos.
She also might be a cannibal. Or it could be like an analogy for, you know, consumer capitalist type stuff.
Again.
But also maybe just a cannibal eating the young, like in Dumplin'.
Yeah, it can be a million and one things. It's Yorgos Lanthimos. It's build your own fucking adventure.
Yes, it's fucking awesome, man. And then you've got Alfie fucking Blessington, the source of her and her mother's history.
Yeah.
A mean, unrelenting, abusive cockhole of a cunt bully with no regard for anyone but himself. He looks down on everyone, including his staff of helpers, constantly injuring them or threatening them with his fucking gun.
Mm-hmm.
He's nothing, but he is Bella's violence and morality awakening. She hits the wall and goes, fuck, this is way too far now.
Andrew Tate.
Yeah. He's the one that like defines that boundary clear as fucking day. And the beautiful irony of after threatening to surgically mutilate Bella's genitals and be like, you are fucking mine. It's now Alfie's own chloroformed body that is under the knife in Bella's surgery. And that is, my friend, fucking
it's
chef's
a
kiss,
way
beautiful.
Of
chef's
know,
kiss.
She is made, literally made. Mm-hmm. She is made by her father.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about her is constructed. And she then has to go into the world and kind of explore her place in a world that she doesn't belong in and doesn't fit in because she wasn't made for that world. She was just made as an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the wonderful thing about the Alfie turning into a goat man at the end is it's the sort of catharsis moment where she is making the world what the world made of her. She's making her challenges and her obstacles into cute little fun experiments.
Yeah.
Like she is. She takes what's unique about her and uses it to change the world around her.
Exactly. Like fucking exactly. You see what I mean?
And that's a lovely, lovely, lovely thing.
It is a lovely thing.
I do feel like it has to exist in this sort of bizarre alternate reality that it does because you could never have Bella working in contemporary society. It just wouldn't work. Like,
I think the lessons work,
explain,
but I don't think Bella works.
Yeah, the lessons would work.
Yeah.
But the examples would be mental.
Yeah. They'd be insane.
Be like, right, this is cheap paper.
Okay.
And on this cheap paper, we have got a machine to draw pictures of imaginary monsters.
Right.
We wrap these pictures of these cheap paper pictures of imaginary monsters
right.
in single-use plastic, and then you buy them
oh,
in
I
the
know.
Hope that you get
right. Okay, yeah, yeah, I
the
see.
The ones that we've printed less of.
Fuck you.
And the times that the machine fucked up,
yeah.
they're worth the most. So what the game is you buy lots and lots and lots of them.
Yeah.
And 99% of the time,
yeah.
it's going to be a cheap paper picture of an imaginary dragon that you already have.
Is this a pop at Magic the Gathering? Is this what this whole thing was? Have you just... Is this just you having a swing at Magic the Gathering?
I'm just saying it'd be a difficult thing to explain to Bella.
I don't know, man.
I don't know if she'd get it.
There's elements of Pokemon cards that she might get. Like, hey, so we printed these. It's great for collectors, but they also immediately became a currency for pedophiles to interact with children. Do you know what I mean? That's something that she might be able to relate to, because when she was a child, she had Duncan Wedderburn
mm-hmm.
tickle a clit in a wardrobe. You know what I mean?
That is true. Yeah.
See?
That is true.
There's links everywhere.
Tale as old as time.
This is where I'm going to try and pull us out of the rabbit hole, because I have got hours more shit to talk about. I'm also very conscious of time.
40 seconds left.
Yeah, I know. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring up a point that a long-time listener and a very dear friend of mine pointed out. It's a new seggy. I'm going to call it.
Thanks, mate. It's the first time you've called me that in a while.
I mean, you know him. You know of him. He knows of you.
Oh, it's not
me. Oh, it's okay. Not. I'm sorry.
Rude.
No, you're not a long time listener. You're a long time talker.
You're not allowed
talker.
Other friends, all right? Right. We're going to go on a boat trip, you and I.
Oh, okay. Shall I bring some books? Or
No. I'll throw them off the side.
Oh, Duncan Wedderburn, you.
Legend.
I'm going to call this new seggy Sykes Says. Long time listener, Adam Sykes. We spoke about this film the other day. And fuck right. me, did he come up with an amazing point. I was like, buddy, I'm in a rabbit hole. I'm losing my brain a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything I'm reading is like linking to everything else. And he was like, yeah, do you want to know something else that's pretty fucking cool about this film? And I was like, go on. I'm right. all ears. And he was like, I've got a little thing, a little observation on some of the symbolism in the film. And it's regarding right. the smoke. And I was like, okay.
Right.
So early on in the film, when Bella's young, and she's at home and she's in Godwin's house. The smoke that emits from Godwin's house is white, symbolizing safety. Home.
Oh, okay. I thought it was new pope, but yep.
Yep. See? New pope or home. Either or.
Yeah.
We're not sure of Godwin's religious beliefs. It's fine. He is God, after all, right?
Probably Catholic, yeah.
When Bella is on the boat after being kidnapped by Duncan Wedderburn and she's experiencing the relationship at its most toxic, the smoke is green.
Ooh.
For toxic. I regret everything. And then when Bella is at Alfie's mansion, the smoke is red, symbolizing danger Ooh. Because she is in fact in very real danger. So you go from a very safe home, a toxic boat, and a dangerous fucking situation in a mansion. And I was mind blown. Adam Sykes, thank you so fucking much for telling me about this, because not
Cheers,
only
bud.
Did you fuel my rabbit hole, you helped me dig a little bit deeper. I love you. Thank you very much. And that's the seggy. Sykes Says.
That's a good seggy. Sykes Says.
I think I'm going to reach out to the Sykeses, Adam and Polly Sykes, every now and then, and be sort of like, have you seen this film? What symbolism did you pull out for me?
You've outsourced your work. Great. You've outsourced having a podcast.
I mean, we can call it a research team. But yes.
Have you figured out why the front of the film is in black and white? Because it does the Wizard of Oz thing where the whole film is in black and white and then at a certain point it switches to colour.
It does. What's your earliest memory?
Lightning storm.
Full colour, lots of blues, bright flashes of yellow. Yeah.
No,
what colour were the walls?
Good point.
So when you're a young kid.
Yeah, I suppose it's that thing, isn't it? It's like the Tool song with like, there's a lateralis, Tool song, Lateralis, where it's like black, then white are all I see in my infancy. Red and yellow then came to me because it's when that's the order colours develop in the infant eye.
Yep. So when you're an infant, you don't see colours as well as you do as you grow up. So
it's like
when
4 weeks.
Yeah, so when Bella's an infant and everything's in black and white, and then it's weird that you just answered your own question, isn't it? It's almost like Yorgos Lanthimos has written a film in which we can have these discussions with no guidance whatsoever, and have a lot of fucking fun with it. You see what I'm saying?
That is true.
There's stuff there, man.
There is stuff there. Would you like to play a game?
I would love to.
Okay. You're fond of Frankenstein, aren't you? This is a Frankenstein movie in all but name.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a Femkenstein.
Yeah.
Title pending.
Patent pending.
Do you reckon you would be able to smash a Frankenstein quiz? Because I've written one.
Okay. Right. I love Frankenstein because it makes me feel weird. I know very little about it, but I would very much like to play this
game. It's going to be a great game.
Yeah.
well, long-time listeners will know that we always play a game at the end of the episode, and that it has recently moved to YouTube. So if you search Every Movie Ever Podcast on YouTube, or click on the link that we have provided in the biography section of whatever app you are using right now to listen to this show, you can click on that, and it's already up. It's already there.
It's like listening to my granddad try and explain what a mobile phone does to his mate who has never seen a mobile phone. Click the link in the bio to go watch the game on YouTube, because that's where they are now. They live over there.
Right. What are you rating poor things, Ben?
Mate, fat 10. Fat 10 all around.
Fat 10.
I've watched this 4 times now, and every single time I'm getting new stuff from the film, and it just drives me into a fucking deeper rabbit hole. It's been a while since a film's done this. I fucking adore it.
I was
going to
say, I would say this is a 90% Ben episode, and I love it.
Do you know what?
Because it's just been sat here, and I'm just like, fuck me, I was going to bring something up, and I'm like, no, I won't
stop
him.
I'm so sorry.
Someone's put 50p in the lad.
Mate, someone put a fucking quid in me, and it's just, my tits have been vibrating for the last hour. I'm telling you,
man. It's brilliant. It's been wondrous to watch. I'm going to go in 8.
That's respectable.
I really, really enjoyed this film.
Good.
I think I went in with the wrong expectations. I was expecting something that was going to kind of make me go, oh, that's a really brave point. And it's feminism 101 at best, if you look at it from that angle.
Yeah.
If you go in wanting a fun, fantastical, Bram Stoker's Dracula meets...
Wolfman
meets Tim Burton. Yeah, it's gorgeous. Mm. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous film.
Mm-hmm.
Emma Stone, it's not a subtle performance, but fuck me, it's a loud one. It's incredible.
Dude, she loses herself in this character, and it's fucking phenomenal.
It's very, very good. So yeah, 8.5. The things that weren't for me were all just failures of expectation.
Okay.
I'm almost certain that if I watch it again, some point in the next 10 years, this will creep up into my kind of top films. It's just...
Can you do me a favor?
I was primed wrong.
When you sit down to rewatch this film, can you just text me? Or the next time that we're hanging out, can we watch this film together? Because I really want to know... Like, my first watch through this film is exactly your opinion of what you've just said.
Okay, nice.
Like, almost word for word, your points. I was just sort of like, well, was that it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then my second watch show, I was like, oh my God, this is it! I want to be there for your awakening. I want to be there for your poor things awakening. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've got a fantastic comment corner that I've been sitting on this whole time.
Let's do it.
We recently posted about the Zone of Interest, and one of the points that I clipped out as a highlight was talking about why I wouldn't be rushing to rewatch it.
Yeah.
Why I wouldn't be rushing to rewatch it. Because... it's a very difficult film about a very difficult period in time, namely the Holocaust. And a lad got in touch on YouTube, and he said, follow along, Ben. This one might lose you a little bit.
Okay.
You should stay far away from real men. It's just going to make you feel less than.
What?
My brother shot me. Yes, mum was angry.
What the fuck? Yeah. Hold on. This is on YouTube.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me see this.
You should stay far away from real men. It's just going to make you feel less than.
Mate, you're reading this with too much grammar. What the fuck is this? You should stay away from real men. You will feel far less than. My brother shot me. Yes, mom was angry. There is no grammar in that. It makes no fucking sense. What were you talking about?
It's written a little haiku, mate.
That's incredible. That's actually fucking incredible. That might be one of the best comments we've ever gotten ever. Wait, so his brother shot him?
Yeah.
And his mom was just angry about it?
Yeah, which makes him a real man.
I don't think it makes you a real man. I think if your immediate family,
to him it does.
Right, so your immediate family, your brother, shoots you, and your mum is just angry about it. Like that's it. They're biologically programmed to love you, and it sounds like this entire situation, there is one, there is one constant in the situation, and it's the real man.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that your family like you that much, buddy. You know what I mean? Like maybe
I do know what you mean.
I don't know. Maybe they're not real men. You know what I mean? Maybe they're just, maybe mum and bro just aren't real men. okay, right. I was absolutely devastated on Insta the other day. Someone gave, someone commented the most hurtful thing I think they ever could have said to us.
Okay.
Are you ready
for
this?
I might have a contender, but yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. I don't think you do, mate. This is like, this is like end game level fucking put down, right?
Okay.
Your goth dolly just casually decided to comment on that fucking reel that will not die about the Avengers. Yeah. And she commented, TikTokers, when they find out what foreshadowing is.
Oof.
I'm going to say that again, Rob. As two men in their mid-30s, I'm going to read this comment one more time. TikTokers!
Yeah.
When they find out what foreshadowing is. Rob, we're not even acknowledged as a fucking podcast in this one. We're on Instagram, someone's calling us TikTokers.
I keep telling you, we need to put link in bio on there to make
it clear.
The advert
it's everywhere. It's in every fucking one, buddy. I'm not, I couldn't process it. I was like, fuck, man. It's coming across like we're just TikTokers. I'm 35.
Are you ready for the killing blow?
Oh,
because that is awful.
That's the worst one.
That's the second worst thing you could ever be called.
I mean, fair fucking play to you. Like that's honestly devastating. People have been outright mean and it's hilarious. That is devastating.
This is worse.
Stop it.
On a recent clip talking about the holdovers.
Yeah.
Where we talk about America sometimes being a little broad.
Okay.
Someone's just gone, okay, James Corden.
Oh my God. Oh, that one cuts so fucking deep.
I don't know which one of us it is, but it's probably both.
Oh my God. That's fucking brutal, man. Dude, people, be meaner. Mean is really funny. Like when people are angry, that shit's hilarious. When people, James Corden.
Yeah, James Corden.
Oh, cats.
TikTok. James Corden with a TikTok account, mate. That's what we
do. Fuck right off. Two TikTokers remind people of James Corden. We're 35, man. That's game ending. That's good. Fuck it. B-movie next week. Let's just end it.
That was Comment Corner. If you'd like to be a part of it next week, just find us on any of the social media apps. We've got Instagram. We've got TikTok. We've got Discord. Join us on there. Drop us a message. And we will, if it tickles our pickle, read it out on the show.
We love each and every one of you so fucking much. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. It has been an absolute pleasure. Please go and head over to our YouTube to check out the YouTube Extra. It's the game. It's a Frankenstein quiz where Rob quizzes me on everything Frankenstein. Spoiler! I knock it out of the park. Perfect score all the way through. That's nothing. Nothing but knowledge from this fountain of youth.
Not true. I'm just going to tell you to do what society always tells you to do, which is just buy shit and fucking generate money for the economy.
Mm.
While Ben is going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and message of this very clear subtexted movie, to thank you with a little motivational speech. You spent an hour of your week with us quite often at the start of the week. And to thank you for that, Ben's going to just give you a little feel-good pep talk now.
Yeah.
While I just tell you to consume.
I'm going to go Yorgos Lanthimos this week, mate. I'm going to trust the audience in this one. I'm not going to give you any guidance whatsoever. I'm going to let you choose your own adventure in the little rabbit hole that we've just been down. But thanks for joining me on that one. I think the one main takeaway from this week is we are not fucking TikTokers with 35-year-olds, all right? It's a podcast. TikTokers. TikTokers? James Corden?